This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24-7 home of the black and gold. SNR, Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome to The Drive. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson. It is draft week.
It is draft week. Happy draft week to all.
Happy draft week to you. It's like the final, just the final 12 days of Christmas here.
Yeah, it's always a crazy week because, rumors fly around and we should believe half of them, but
I don't even know if you should believe half of them.
We should believe none of them, probably, but they make for good conversation. A week ago, I always thought it was tough. Like, it's a pretty down time, where this week, the molecules start moving a little faster and everything's a little bit ramped up,
Yeah, a little bit. And as usual, Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert held their pre-draft press conference in person.
How about that?
The first in-person event the Steelers have had since last year's NFL scouting combine.
Wow. Very cool.
So it was the first press conference I've been to in quite a while. Lots of stuff that they covered there.
Real quick, I assume you guys were all masked up and everything, but in sort of distance. But was it like pretty close to a press conference?
We did it at Heinz Field instead of the UPMC facility. But
what's the difference?
What's that?
Why would they care?
There's more room to spread out.
Okay, just a bigger area.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
So Kevin Colbert talked about, how this pandemic has changed things. And we've talked about this, whereas last year you had the scouting combine, you had the All-Star games, but then no pro days.
But you were pretty far into it at that
point. You had a pretty good idea. This year it was
the scouts
opposite.
Got to go into schools all year.
Well, and that's the other thing he talked about. He said this year the only time the scouts could go on campus was during game days. And then you still weren't allowed to talk to.
And you don't see practice.
Yeah.
He
said they saw every. How did he put it? He said they had a scout at least one game for every draftable prospect except for six.
Wow.
Now, that's on their list.
Right. That doesn't mean there's 400 names. It's probably 200 names or something
Right. So that leads me to believe that they've got some Division II and Division III guys who are on their list because those guys didn't play.
If you didn't go to Trey Lance's first game.
You didn't go.
You didn't see him or Raddick.
Or only game.
Or only game, that's what I mean.
So I would assume they were at that one.
Okay.
But for Quinn Miners, you didn't see Quinn Miners play last year unless you...
No.
Yeah.
You didn't see Rousseau play. You didn't see Penei Sewell. I'm surprised there's not more than six.
I asked him specifically about that again, about the...
Maybe you count the opt-outs.
The opt-outs.
Yeah.
I said, you told us last summer that, you would value the opt-outs a little differently than you would value the guys who did play. And he said... That's still the case that, if it's close or if they have a similar grade, that they would value the player who played more recently over the player who had not. Because he said, we don't know how long it's going to take that player who didn't play to get up to speed. We don't know how long it takes. So, if you go without playing football for a couple of years or even a year, it's going to take you time to get your feet back on you.
It has to. Walker Little is a massive example, and I don't understand why he didn't do the Senior Bowl.
Maybe it was because of that.
Maybe it was because of it. I thought he looked bad.
Yeah,
right.
I haven't played in 2 years. I don't want to go out there. I haven't really blocked anybody.
I don't trust myself. Yeah. These guys are just coming off a regular season. Yeah, I think all along we've kind of said, Jamar Chase is probably different, and Penei Sewell is probably different.
And he brought those guys. He's like, look, there's guys who are going to go in the first top 10 picks who opted out last year. And great, but.
Sure. But the third, fourth rounders, Gowen from Central Florida. I mean, there's a long list. And I understand why these guys did, but it couldn't have helped their stock. Rousseau, to me, is a really interesting example because all you've seen since his big sack year was a so-so pro day. Below average pro day. Why don't I go with Phillips instead?
He did note, and I hadn't really thought about this, that the guys in the Pac-12 and Big Ten were really – at a disadvantage this year because initially their conferences both said they were going to wait and play in the spring.
Right, okay.
And then
timeline.
So those guys just made decisions based on that. Look, you're not going to play this spring. You're not going to play until the spring. I'm not going to play football. I'm either leaving college to go start working out or I'm signing with an agent.
Right.
At which point you're done.
Right. You sign with an agent. Let's get this draft.
You might have not opted out. You might not have opted out, but then you didn't have a choice because you're a month into the process, your school's we're actually going to play.
We could use some bucks. Yeah. We could get some games out there. Right.
So
that's a good point.
Those conferences kind of screwed those kids a little bit.
They absolutely did. I mean, such a strange year, but that's a great example of, you know, not the rules changed on the fly.
Yeah.
You know, so, but still, I mean, the Steelers and every other team have to weigh that. You know, like, I feel bad for
haven't seen them,
but that doesn't mean I'm using my fifth-round pick on you instead of somebody else to play the same position.
Now, we mentioned Walker Little. That's going to be one of those cases where, to me, you know, when you get to the bottom of the second round or the third round, and he's still available against somebody who's probably a lesser talent.
Yeah,
that's where that comes into play. Like,
exactly.
Now maybe somebody looks at him and says, "Okay, we're gonna use a high second round pick on him because we think he's really talented."
Mm-hmm.
God bless him.
Yeah, great.
But I think, you know, when you get down to that, maybe that third tier of offensive tackles, you know, maybe once you get past the first dozen,
where he's clearly more athletic and
gifted
than the
I other. Think that's where that comes into play. Where, okay, he didn't play this year, but we think he's a better player than this guy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take him even though he didn't play, you know, in the last year.
And I'm trying to think of scenarios, too. Like, I don't know, if you're Baltimore, the Jets, Miami, some of these teams now that have a lot more
multiple picks, yeah.
Jacksonville, you know, as much to lose.
Can afford to take that chance.
Yeah, and he can still take a fifth-round tackle or whatever. Or let's say Baltimore signs Villanueva or one of these veterans. Now, we can wait a year on him.
That's the other thing about that is I thought it was interesting that Colbert noted, you know, you don't know what to expect of them in 2021. Well, if you're taking a developmental tackle, do you really care?
Do you really care? Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If it takes him, you know, 2 months to get up to speed again, you weren't planning on playing him anyways.
Yeah. I mean, if the Steelers take Walker Little in the middle of the third round, or frankly, five other developmental
Spencer
tackles.
Brown,
right,
yeah,
exactly.
Who didn't play. Yeah.
And if they come to camp and they're better than anyone else on your team, you're going to play them.
Yeah.
But you don't have those. You didn't take.
You're not
them
counting
with those
on
intentions.
It. Yeah.
Right.
Now your first and second round picks, you're probably counting on playing.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
So right. I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the third makes it a lot easier.
It does make me wonder a little bit about Quinn Meinerz.
I was about to. It's funny, we were just thinking the same thing. I'm like, you hear all these reports, he's not getting out of round two, or barely, if at all.
Yeah.
A lot of teams love him. But, boy, it's been a while. I mean, at least he saw the Senior Bowl, though.
He practiced at the Senior Bowl. He didn't play in the game, though.
Didn't play in the game.
That's what
I think
stinks.
He left on Wednesday or Thursday
or
whatever, right?
He saw him for a couple of days of practice.
And he was great.
And he was fantastic,
yeah.
But.
I mean, if you're – I don't know if you can take him over a Creed Humphrey.
Right. That's the thing, it comes down to. Now, Colbert said that the – They had Zoom calls with 100 players.
Is that a rule? Can you do 100?
I think it was unlimited this year.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. But obviously, you're limited
by
time.
Yeah. Right.
Because you couldn't talk to players. You couldn't take them out to dinner at the pro days. You couldn't do all the things that they typically like to do. So they made sure that they talked to a lot of different prospects. And he said he and Mike Tomlin attended 9 pro days together, and they went to the ones where they could get the most bang for their buck.
Right. Why are they at Clemson? Well, they had a million guys.
Geez, Tomlin and Colbert are at Alabama.
Right.
No kidding.
Ohio State.
So was everybody else.
Right. Yeah. And they'll go there next year, too. Folks.
They went to the places where they could see the most prospects.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and even for next year. I mean, you're going to talk to people, you know, who you got next year? You know, that's going to come up, too.
Right.
You know.
He said as well that they were able to bring in for the NFL medical combine 100 players, and then they got an additional 42. So they had about 142 players that they got really good in person. I guess the Steelers were able to send their medical.
I assume
people,
every team sent a doctor,
to get them in there to give these guys a physical.
Good.
And then after,
like, I'm sure Landon Dickerson is one.
He definitely was. That's where the reports came out that he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Zaven Collins. Yeah,
yeah,
Zaven Collins was there for some reason.
I mean, if it's 142, it's almost as many as, I mean, that's close to 50%, you know, guys of names that we know.
Yeah, so they got medicals.
So that's
on,
really important.
They got medicals on 142 guys.
Okay. Very recent ones, too.
Yeah.
You know, how's that knee coming along? Or, you know. Right.
But the guys who weren't available for that, he said that they, you know, look, we're going to have to count on our doctors, our medical staff calling around and talking to people who they know who've dealt with these kids. So it goes back to that whole thing again. It's the same thing with the
communication
scouts.
And yeah. Who you know.
Who do you know? How long have you been doing your job? Yeah. You know.
I mean, I'm sure there's some surgeons, like, you know, James Andrews comes to mind, you know, that, well, he did the surgery. Everyone trusts him. Yeah, the Steelers have probably had a million conversations with him over the years. And there's probably other surgeons whose names I don't know that are similar. But I don't know. I know so little about medical, obviously. Many people listening know more. Some of these guys, could you be like, hey, send me your latest x-ray or, your, you know what I mean? It's like, give me something that I can evaluate and not just trust another evaluation. I'm just curious how that goes.
Yeah. So, I mean, and he said, look, it comes down to trusting those people to give you the right information. You could draft a guy who, quite frankly, can't play.
Yeah, he gets here and, I mean, you'd be pretty upset.
I think that happened, if I remember correctly, Chris Ferris, if you remember him.
The big tackle
from
UCLA.
Third round draft pick from UCLA.
It was like first round buzz with him.
Yeah, 98, 99. I can't remember exactly what year. Now, he was healthy at draft time. He hurt his foot right before training camp. Showed up, and it just ruined his
– never really
issues. Yeah, had one of those stress fractures in his foot that never really healed, and that was it.
Okay, that was his story. Yeah, I remember him. Didn't expect him to be there in the third round. He was on all the lists early on and stuff like that. And okay, interesting. No, but this whole process is crazy. I mean, I'm sure the Steelers are handling it well. I'm sure Kevin's on top of things. You know, as all teams are. But there's going to be more misses, I would think.
You would think
than ever. You know,
and he, if you remember the last couple of weeks here, the Steelers signed five guys out of tryouts.
Yeah,
that were guys who were available last year, went undrafted, decided to go. They talked to their schools. They went back. They worked out. And the Steelers signed five of those guys because of the rules that the NCAA put out this year that allowed the seniors to go back for another year.
Okay.
He said that cut the UFA class, which is typically between 700 and 800 players, down to about 400 players potentially.
I see what you're saying. So after the correct me if I'm wrong. So, like, when the draft ends, he thinks the pool of undrafted guys to get those numbers up to your camp roster is less than ever.
Yeah, it's typically 700 to 800 players who just were seniors who just finished playing football at some level.
Gotcha. Which means next year's is going to be massive.
Next year's going to be huge.
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 So, I mean, there will be more players, too, that show up out of nowhere, like a Wentz or whatever, I would think, next year, too, just because there's more of them eligible.
And they're more experienced.
And more experienced and more eligible, and they got an extra year of tape or whatever, too. That's a good point. You know, it's probably going to be more competitive to get those undrafted punters or, you know, what I mean? Whatever the positions, everybody wants to get an extra guy.
Yeah, so the Steelers right now are sitting at 75 players, which is used a little bit higher than what they typically are going into the draft. So they have 8 draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
We can then assume that they're going to sign at least 7 undrafted free agents,
which
is on the low end.
10 draft picks.
Yeah, usually they'll sign 10 to 15 somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Well, they don't need to do that this year because they've got their 5 of them are already on the roster.
Okay, that makes sense. Looking further into it, when this applies to all teams, I bet the 7th round's junk. You know what I mean? Like, if
unless you've got a guy, we might see more punters and things of that nature drafted.
Maybe you take the long snapper you know is going to make your team, or the punter or kicker, or, you know, something like that. But I bet the teams are looking at the 7th and maybe 6th round, like, I don't know if these guys can make my team.
Yeah.
You know, and I've heard people say that, you know, that the top of the draft is still strong. The middle rounds are strong.
This draft is, to me, 5 rounds deep.
Yeah. And then
it tails off hard.
Every mock we do at the end, it's like, I don't want any of this.
Yeah. I find some diamonds in the rough, but if I'm finding diamonds in the rough, they're probably going in the 4th round. I just don't know it.
Right, because every team has 150 guys on their board, and he's, you know, 140 on there, and he goes in the 5th round or whatever. Right. No, I think you're right. I mean, I don't think we'll see a lot of teams trading their 6th and 7th this round for future 5ths and things like that, because nobody's going to want these picks at the bottom of the draft.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess one thing we should remember – maybe even when camp rolls around, is, oh, that 7th rounder didn't make the team. That's a terrible pick. Well, I'm curious how many do. You know, like, I bet there's not a lot of hits with that.
Yeah, I would agree. Mike Tomlin was actually asked about his starting cornerback job opposite Joe Haden, which is Cam Sutton.
Yeah,
no big surprise there.
I mean, he didn't hesitate one bit to say his
yeah.
Up, right.
But he was also asked who his starting left tackle is right now, and he said Chukwuma Okorafor.
Really? I guess we didn't know that for sure. I always assumed Banner would be left, Chukes would be right.
Well, I was told in the past that they thought Banner was a future starting left tackle, but I think he prefers to stay on the right side.
I mean, he won the right job a year ago.
Yeah, he won that job last year because of his run blocking.
Mm-hmm.
Typically,
and both have played both.
Yeah, but typically you want your better run blocker on the right side.
Sure, sure. I'm fine with that. I never felt strong about that. And if you look at their two games, Chukes is more leftish and Banner is more rightish. I don't think that matters as much anymore. I know it doesn't matter as much anymore. It's more, to me, kind of like the Bud Watt conversation of where are you most comfortable? And it's interesting to me, if they both are more comfortable on the right side, Banner might carry more weight then. They might think
right.
Banner's the better
player.
Well, you won
the job last year, so.
Right. I know you were the starter here on the right, but you're moving. You're the one moving because Zach likes right better. I don't know. I'm just kind of
yeah.
spitballing.
It goes back to the Watt Dupree thing when they mm-hmm. flip flop those sides.
Well, TJ was more important.
TJ was more. he's more comfortable on the left side. So guess what?
So
Bud, you're going
right.
to the right.
Right.
And that worked out pretty well.
It did, and it fit both their skill sets a lot. And this could too. And Chukes has plenty of left tackle experience. Makes me wonder if Villanueva or someone like that still could be in the mix.
I don't know.
You know,
I think maybe you just go into this. I think you just draft one and
have four guys.
Yeah,
I mean, that's plenty.
And you've got Joe
Hegg, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And he's got experience, I think, on both sides.
And a guard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, he's a good athlete, too. I wonder, too, well, I guess I was going to say, does signing Joe Hegg mean they're after leaner, former tight end athlete types?
Potentially, yeah.
But then they signed Banner. that's why I kind of hesitated to say that.
I think
that.
He's a little better athlete than he gets credit for.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's a college basketball player.
Right. I mean, he was a five-star recruit.
He actually played basketball at USC. Not at some little slappy school. He was on the team at USC.
Yeah. I mean, like, we talk about Julius Peppers being the sixth man at UNC.
Yeah.
This is something fun to do. Banner was able to play Pac-10, Pac-10 at that point.
Yeah.
You know, college basketball. Interesting. No, you might be right. I mean, I think that a third-round pick could be a tackle, something like that,
yeah.
And then you go in with those four and see how it works out.
Colbert was asked about the running back position and if he believes that that position is one that you don't take a first-round pick at. And here's what he said. It's actually pretty interesting. Let me find it here first.
Okay.
It's here somewhere.
Okay.
This is good radio.
Yeah,
okay, here it is. Okay.
We're tired of us talking anyways.
I don't think you can ever underestimate the value of a quality player at any position, and running back is no different. I understand that the game has changed. It's more a horizontal game than it is a vertical game. People don't play traditional football with two back sets and power games. It has changed. But if you have a dynamic player at any position, that player should make a difference, and running back is no different.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Hall of Fame runners, most of those guys were taken in high rounds. I don't ever place that value high or low on a given position. I base it on who the player is and what that player can do to help us.
It's a great answer. And I agree with 99% of that, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, I don't discredit the analytics people out there, and
like the Panthers aren't killing themselves or aren't upset that they took Christian McCaffrey in the top 10.
No, I mean, even the Rams and Cowboys, guys that maybe have invested too much after the fact, I don't think are upset about the draft pick.
Yeah,
it's a much different conversation to me to invest in a guy long term after his deal is up. But let's say the Steelers take Najee Harris at 24, you got him for 4 years, then an option. Then a franchise. You know, you have 6 years cost controlled, with those last two being kind of expensive.
Right.
But if he's one of the best backs in the league and you get 6 years out of that guy, four of them cheap.
6 years in the NFL is a long time.
It's an eternity for a back, you know, and you draft one 5 years.
Really, it's an eternity for any player.
For anyone, right. If you get any back.
You get a six-year career out of a draft pick that you did, that was the right pick to make.
Yep. But that also kind of contradicts why you don't take running backs too. Or it contradicts why you do take running backs too, because let's say you take Tevin Jenkins with that pick, and you can do the exact same thing, and you don't have to go get a tackle for way more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can find a back in free agency.
But in this year's draft is so different.
Right.
And again, when he was talking about the depth positions in this draft, you said, look, it's really good at offensive tackle, wide receiver, cornerback. The linebackers are deep.
All the ones we've been mentioning.
Center is unusually deep.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, and he said
all those?
Yeah. He said, you know, tight end, quarterback, and running back are a little thinner. And then the defensive line is awful.
He said
it might be the worst class he's seen in his memory.
It really is. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Again, it's great that they signed Tyson Alualu. I'd love for them just to not have to get in that market at all. That is a lot of value, just not to have to swim.
But it sets up for them if they want to take a running back in the first round to get your center and offensive tackle in 2 and 3 because there's that kind of depth in this draft.
I mean, maybe in the fourth round.
Yeah, I mean there'll be guys
in the league that are third, fourth rounders.
There'll be guys available there.
Yeah.
You may get the best center though in the second round in this draft.
Yeah, you might. You might. I mean, again, we tend to think
put it this way, you'll get one of the top 3 or 4 centers in this draft.
I think there's 3 I really, really like.
Yeah,
and I think
you'll get one of those.
One will be there in the
at
second
55.
Round.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. I'm curious, just overall in the league, will tackles go a little higher than we think? You know, like. All of a sudden, you see this Ravens trade, and like the Ravens have 2 first-round picks. I bet like Eichenberg is one of their picks, or you know, just because there's a lot doesn't mean they're going to fall. But I still think you'll get good ones in the 3rd, 4th round. They'll just be developmental.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just think people will be happy, and if you're going to give me a tackle that I have a 20th overall grade on at 30, I'll take them. You know.
No, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
But centers aren't viewed the same.
At the same time, you know, I think it did. Slow down the offensive tackle free agency.
There's a few out there still.
There's still some out there.
Yeah.
But it was curious to me that the Chiefs looked at that and said, well, Orlando Brown's, we know what he is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We know he's a start. He can play left tackle in this league. So that's worth the 31st pick in the draft for us. And you know.
I think the other factor there, too, is there's a lot more not prototypical lefts. You know, like Tevin Jenkins is a really nice player, but he'd probably be more of a typical right. Eichenberg is a little short-armed, you know, probably better on the right or guard.
Brown isn't a prototypical left.
Yeah, but
he just showed that he could do it last year.
He could do it.
Yeah.
And, you know,
athletically, if you looked at him athletically next to these guys in this draft.
He's worse than all of them.
Yeah.
I mean,
not even close.
Hideous. And I think he's a good player, and I think that's a good trade for Kansas City. And their line looks dramatically different than when they lost the Super Bowl, obviously. But that guy, I was listening to Ross Tucker's podcast today, former lineman, friend of mine. He says, and he's not the only one believing this, the Ravens have the most offensive line-friendly offense I've ever seen life at any level.
It's all run blocking.
Right. And he's going to do the total. He's a good pass blocker, but he's going to pass block way more now than he used to. You know what I mean? Against Chubb and Bosa. You know,
and they're going to know he's passing. And
right. And he's not coming off the ball mashing people over and over and over.
Yeah.
So I think it's still a good trade. Left tackles are hard to find. But it's a lot different for him.
Yeah. We haven't really talked about this, but the Ravens are talking about signing Alejandro Villanueva.
I guess. They had Dennis Kelly in today, too.
I guess they would potentially put him at right tackle.
It's funny, I was on Baltimore radio last week, and they were asking me about Al, you know, and I gave him my very honest opinion, most of it very positive, especially his leadership and the player he is and all that. And I thought, yeah, but it's kind of curious because I don't know if he's a right tackle. And they brought him in for a visit right about that time, and I assume that's what the visit centered around. Like, how comfortable are you playing on the right side? Or
It early in his career.
But he's a left tackle.
But his issue last season wasn't with his pass blocking per se.
No.
It was his run blocking.
Right.
He got very little movement in run blocking.
I didn't think he was a real good fit.
Yeah.
When I left the air, when we summed it up.
Like it would make more sense for Indianapolis to sign him and put him at left tackle.
Absolutely.
Than it would for Baltimore to sign him and put him at right tackle.
Right. And you even mentioned it when he went there the first time. Does that mean maybe Stanley's not 100% for
Well, that's
camp?
Possible, yeah.
You know, if you draft Eichenberg or whoever and – or Tevin, I'm sure they love Tevin Jenkins. You know, guys like that. Could Al be the left tackle for the first month and maybe be a swing guy or, you know, be your pseudo big tight end? You know, the 6th offensive lineman, I'm sure that's something that they'll do plenty of too. But, I mean, he's an old dog to teach that new trick. I know he's done it, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. And, you get used to coming out of those sets with your left foot is back. And, you know.
He's not a great run blocker.
That's the other part of the equation.
That's all they do.
Yeah.
You know, like that fit doesn't make sense to me, except for they probably respect him as an opponent and as
a person. What that tells me. Yeah. Like the Steeler fans who were killing him, well, he stinks, he's awful, he's this, mm-hmm. he's that. Well, the Ravens have played against him twice a year for the last better part of the decade.
I'm sure they have great respect for the man and the opponent. And, you know, that's what I took out of it.
They don't even bring him in for a talk if they didn't think he was still mm-hmm. good.
I mean, I think Kelly makes more sense. I mean, I'd rather Val. I think he's a better player. But Kelly's been a swing tackle his whole life.
Yeah.
Played both sides. He's a typical third. You know, you draft one in the first round. You got two first-round picks. That makes more sense to me.
Another thing that we didn't talk about was the trade back. Now, Colbert said that the Steelers aren't going to be trading up. That's highly unlikely. They value their eight picks.
Yeah.
going to come up with they don't do a mock draft, but they'll do a mock draft based on who they would pick at each of those 24 spots. Essentially setting their board down to 24.
Kind of like we have with the top 24.
What we've done with our top 24.
Worst case scenario, our 24th guy is sitting there, which never happens.
They gave up on doing the whole mock draft and trying to figure out who's going to they're going to take this guy. And who cares?
Who cares, right?
Who do we have value in these picks? So that's their 24. The trade down, however, in the first round got a little more difficult with that Kansas City trade.
Because you think Baltimore's
because now there are three of the picks behind them in the first round are owned by Cleveland and Baltimore.
Yeah.
They're not going to make trades with those teams.
I don't know if the Steelers have to stay in the first round if they trade down, but you're right. I mean, I hadn't thought about that. So yeah.
They're already at 24, so that only leaves you five spots to move down to if you want to stay in the first round.
Three out of eight are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. Although I didn't Steelers traded with Wormley with Baltimore.
Yeah, that was a fifth-round pick, though.
It's a minor deal. I was a little shocked Kansas City and Baltimore did business.
I was as well, but I can't see the Steelers and Ravens swapping first-round picks.
First-round picks to help each other out.
Nah, that doesn't.
Doesn't jive.
And I don't see Cleveland and the Pittsburgh. You know, they're only a couple of picks apart.
No.
So that only leaves you five spots if you want to stay in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City, quite frankly, when we were making some of our mock drafts, they were one of the teams that was trying to trade with us to get up into.
That would make sense. Tampa often does too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what Tampa would want.
I don't. Yeah. There would have to be somebody there. We got to have this guy.
Yeah. Right. And that's what I was sitting here thinking is, besides the Steeler obvious targets, who do you want sitting there that people might want? Maybe one of the edge guys.
Maybe Mac Jones falls.
I
don't see that.
I'm believing that too. I mean, Zaven Collins, JOK.
Maybe JOK.
Yeah.
And I don't see him being a great fit for the Steelers. Or, one of the 4-3 edge rushers.
Yeah. Phillips or Pay or one of those guys, I could see. It makes more sense to me. I'm not sure a tackle's going to stand out so much, and Steelers might just take him if he does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
I don't think it's Moehring.
No.
You know?
No, there's the.
I mean, he's not special enough just because I don't think it's Barmore, you know?
Right? Yeah. That could be, if you're a team that doesn't have a defensive tackle and you want to, he's the best one.
He's the only one you have first-round grade on.
Yeah, maybe. That could happen.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, it's an odd draft that way. I don't think a receiver would jump out at me.
But I could definitely see one of the inside linebackers. Maybe somebody wants to get up ahead of Cleveland and maybe Baltimore or some of those teams.
Yeah, I guess that makes some sense.
Or Kansas City. Oh, Kansas City's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. But some of those teams that, you know, where you're looking at kind of like what happened a few years ago when the Steelers got shut out on the inside linebackers. You saw some because there were four that year.
You saw all the potholes.
And you saw the teams make their moves to go up and get those.
Mm-hmm. Knowing who they had to get ahead of.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I could see Cleveland being in the market for a Collins or a JOK or somebody like that, trying to get ahead of them.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But that's going to do it for this segment of the drive. So for my partner, Matt Williamson, for Jacob Recht here on site, keeping us on the air, I'm Dale Lally. We appreciate you listening to The Drive on Steelers Nation Radio.